Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I am your host, Spencer Wilson, flying solo for a majority of the show. Sean, Mr. Cloud, who is the producer of the show and usually runs the board and the buttons and everything back here, is on vacation, which, I mean, I guess he's earned. I guess he's earned some time off. No, he's definitely earned some time off. In Orlando right now, enjoying some time with family and his fiance. Very well earned. But even though he is on vacation, he will be joining me here in the next segment to talk about the Patriots and Rams from Sunday and our thoughts on that. But first, we will start here locally, as we always do, because Nevada basketball this week went 3-1 combined. A very good week for the men's and women's team. Let's start with the Nevada men's team, because they are just continuing to run through their conference schedule with the one loss right now, the exception being to New Mexico. But they went 2-0 this past weekend, first beating rivals Boise State at home, 93-73, a little more of a comfortable win this time around than their game earlier in Boise, where they won by 1 point, so a little bit nicer there. Nevada outscoring Boise 41-30 in the first half, and then 52-43 in the second half. And since that 20-point half against Air Force at home, Nevada has kicked it up a notch, averaging 47 points in its last seven halves. And what that says to me is that they're no longer a second-half team, because that game against Air Force, I feel like, was this team at the beginning of the season in a nutshell. They had a hard time getting out of the gate. They had a hard time really flexing their muscle until either the last 3 or 4 minutes of the first half or the start of the second half. And in that game against Air Force, you had obviously their worst first half under Coach Muss. 20 points in that half. And since then, they've completely dominated. And they needed that kind of a half against a team like Air Force. Take nothing away from the Falcons. They're a very good team. But to have 20 points at home against a team like Air Force, I think that was the kind of straw that broke the camel's back in terms of getting off to slow starts and kind of coming out waiting for their opportunity. Their opportunity now has become the tip. When they get right out of the blocks and they're able to flex their muscle on these teams early in games, and you can really start to see them just build. I think that's what happened against Boise. They were really able to just build and build and build and not really look like the Broncos had a chance to touch them in that game. And I think the bigger part of that was, again, not really relying on the three-point shot. They shot well from the three-point line, but they were moving the ball around more. They were sharing the ball more. I mean, they had 22 assists in this game. That's the second most this season, next to their 23 they had against San Jose State. I feel like with the talent this team has on it, the more they move the ball, the more dangerous they're going to become, because when you settle for threes, it's easy for teams to kind of pack it in and make you shoot, and if you can't make it, you can't make it. But when you pass the ball around, you make them have to defend all five guys, this team truly becomes a championship contender. And following that home win against Boise State, they went on the road to play Colorado State last night, where the Pack picked up a 98-82 win. Jordan Caroline led the way, scoring 40 points, as Nevada had a hard time keeping their lead in the first half. And again, not necessarily a slow start. I think you just kind of have to tip your cap to Colorado State. I mean, Nevada didn't play the best basketball in that first half, but I think the Rams were really just up to the task. They looked at this Nevada team and said, we're going to try and go punch for punch with you. And in that first half, they were able to do it, kind of fighting back in, falling back out a little bit, but just never really getting too far out of it until the second half, when Nevada just took care of business and got refocused and did what they needed to do. And as of right now, the Nevada men's team is a 4 seed in Joe Lunardi's bracketology, facing off against the 13th seed New Mexico State in the first round. But a 4 seed right now, I think that looks pretty good for Nevada. Getting that 13 seed matchup, of course, you have to run to the 5 seed in the second round. But usually we've seen 13s over 4s, so I don't think that's the worst case scenario for them to maybe be a little tested against a team like New Mexico State or whatever that 13th seed would be. And when you back up then against that 5th seed, I think it would make it even better. And I think for Nevada, being the team they are, that'd be a great position for them. And of course, the next Wolfpack home game, or not home game, I should say, but just the next Pack game, although they will be home for it, is against New Mexico tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. If you can't make it to the game, you can catch the broadcast of it right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM with Mr. John Ramey. That pregame starting at 2:30. Mentioned it in the beginning of the segment, New Mexico, that one and only loss on Nevada's record right now. So for them to have the opportunity to avenge that here at home is huge. And they've obviously been on a roll since that loss in conference play. So it would be great to see them, especially here at home in front of what you know is going to be a packed, rowdy Lawler Event Center, to get that revenge win. But the women's basketball team also had a good week, going 1-1 in conference games. First, they fell on the road to Boise State 80-65 in a hard-fought game. But senior Jade Redmond just continues to stand out, as she had her second 20-point game in a row between this game and their game against UNLV. She has scored double figures in every game that she has played in up to that point. And freshman Emma Torbert led the way on the boards with 8 rebounds. But Nevada, after coming off this loss, we've seen them. When they come off of losses, they've come out really, really well. I think that's a key to a really well-coached team, is when you lose a game, how well you come back out the next game. And they responded by coming back to Reno to take on Colorado State. They got a 68-57 win, and this completes the sweep of the Rams by the Pack this year. This game was a lot closer than their first game was. 9 minutes they spent tied in this game, and they had 16 lead changes. Colorado State, who had an abbreviated roster, had a lot of injuries and transfers that weren't able to play, but the limited bench they did have really stepped up. But Nevada able to hold off the Rams and get that victory. And then along with the men's game tomorrow, the women's team will also be in action. Tip off at noon on our sister station 94.1 FM. And that pregame is at 11:40 a.m. With Mr. Doug Greenwald. Of course, that's not the only PAC sports going on right now. The men's tennis team had a solid showing this past weekend in Eugene, Oregon. First, they beat the University of Portland 6-1, and they fell to the host, the University of Oregon, 4-0, bringing the record of the men's team this year to 3-2. The men's team will be off this weekend before returning to action in Central California next weekend. And then after taking this past week off, the 5-0 women's tennis team gets back on the court, first facing UC Santa Barbara today, and Long Beach State tomorrow, capped off by their match with UC Riverside on Sunday. The swimming dive team ended their regular season with a bang, beating New Mexico 154-144 on the road last week, finishing 9-1 on the season. They will have a week and a half off now until they head to Minneapolis, Minnesota for the Mountain West Championships, February 20th to the 22nd. The track and field team had a new pole vault record set at the Colorado Invitational, with Gabby Palmer vaulting 13 feet 6 and a quarter inches. And Nicola Adder continues her great season, setting a personal best in the 60-meter hurdles for a fourth time this season. And then Hilly Dobbs, also coming off a solid cross-country season, ran a solid 10 minutes 8 seconds in the 3,000 meters, finishing 15th. Overall. And then the softball team will start their season this weekend with 2 games on Saturday and 2 games on Sunday at the UC Davis / Sacramento State tournament. Saturday will face off against Santa Clara University and then Sacramento State. Then on Sunday they'll play UC Santa Barbara and UC Davis. So a lot of sports going on right now in the world of the University of Nevada, and it's going to be a fun time. So be sure to get out there and support as many of those teams as you can. And if you can't make it to the basketball games, be sure to tune in for those broadcasts. You're on 94.5 FM and our sister station, 94.1 FM. When we come back, Mr. Sean Cloud will be on the phone talking about the Patriots and the Rams and what went down on Sunday here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Just about a week ago, the 53rd Super Bowl champion was crowned, and for the sixth time, Brady and Belichick stood at the top of the mountain. He is not able to join us in studio for the whole show today because he is taking care of some business in Florida, but he is joining us over the phone now, Mr. Sean Cloud. Sean, how's it going, man?
And it's going good. I mean, I'm sad that I can't be there, but I needed some sort of vacation. So I, you know, traveled across the country to Florida to visit family, and it's sunny. Is it snowing out there right now?
It is not snowing currently, but we are supposed to get some pretty good storms this weekend. I think Saturday night into Sunday is supposed to be the big window.
Oh, dang. Yeah, when I was leaving, it was snowing. So it was takeoff, it was snowing. I was like, oh, this is perfect. We're going to leave this 23-degree weather. And then we stepped off the plane, and I was just sweating already. I had like my PJs on, and I just remember getting off the plane in Florida, and all these people are looking at me like, why is this guy wearing PJs right now? You know?
Your sweat's got sweat on it, but do you at least have a tan right now?
Oh yeah. Like, I went for like a 20-minute walk yesterday, and I already got tanned all over. You can't even see any white anymore.
That's what you get, man, living in Florida. It's good weather. As long as you don't mind being a little sweaty every now and then, you're going to have fun.
Exactly.
Let's talk about something. What? Go ahead, man.
You picked the Patriots to win.
I did.
And they won.
Yep.
But I think we all picked the over on this game. No one really expected it, minus this one guy that I read about who put $250 on that the Rams would only score 3 points, and he won seven figures.
Who would have guessed that? Yes, I did pick the Patriots. Not that I'm necessarily proud to boast about that I got that right. But, defense, kind of the storyline no one really expected coming into this game. Both defenses very respected, obviously, especially with Donald and Sue on the Rams defense. But to think that we would have a 3-0 game at halftime, I think caught a lot of people off guard.
Yeah, and I mean, watching the game, it was very, you know, I'm not going to say it was rigged or anything, but that's what the feeling was in the beginning, because some of those calls, like flags that came off, really shouldn't have gone against the Rams in the first place. And especially when you hear the callers be like, oh, that's against the Patriots, and then it's all of a sudden it's a holding call that wasn't there against the Rams, you know. But it was a very good defensive battle. It was very, you know, no offense in the first half could get going, which was nice to see. And then in the second half, you know, Brady and Belichick somehow just were like, you know what, let's just go for it and see what happens.
Yeah, I wonder how nervous those referees were going into this game, seeing as how the last game played ended in a lot of controversy with those. I wonder if when they were making their calls or if they were having some pregame conversations, if there were more jitters going around the referees than usual.
Right. My friend that was with me, he's not a football fan, so it was pretty interesting going to this one of these big game parties and having to explain every play that happens to my friend. It was fun because then I got to explain it. I felt like an announcer next to him. It was great. But he kind of even suggested, he was like, you know, what if they're like throwing these flags and then someone from, you know, L.A. or something is saying, okay, this is what the call should be. This is what the call should be, you know, because they weren't. Sometimes they throw a flag and they weren't entirely sure what the call was, you know? So.
That's true. I could definitely see them looking to an outside voice, maybe on the headset, trying to get a different point of view, like even more so in this game than other games. But let's talk about, we've kind of talked about our overall feeling on the game. What about your overall feeling on Brady now? I know obviously he's never going to be the most popular man between the two of us, but after this win, after the postseason run they had, after the little bit of the doubt that started sprouting up during the season about this team, what's your vision of Brady right now after this?
I mean, it kind of feels like he's unstoppable, to be honest. If he decides to go the next 3 years again, which I don't even know for sure that's going to happen, because there's some, you know, post-game remarks where we kind of felt like, was this his last time? Is this the last time we're seeing Brady? But I don't think it's the last time. I think he'll stay for maybe one more season. And if he does stay, and if everything goes, and if Gronk stays and all these weapons stay, they'll probably make another run to the big game next year.
I was going to say, do you think Brady stays if Gronk stays? Or if Gronk retires, do you think Brady then thinks about saying, yeah, you know what, I don't need to play until I'm 45. I got one of my pretty much my biggest weapon leaving for retirement, and I might join him. Do you think that's what he might do?
Honestly, no, because he's not the biggest weapon. People say, oh, Gronk's the biggest weapon, and all he really had was that, you know, I think it was like a 30 or 26 yard pass that got him into the red zone for Sony Michel to run it in of 1 yard out. That was the only thing that he really had. Other than that, to me, his biggest weapon is Edelman. So if Edelman were to leave, then if I were Brady, I'd be like, well, all my weapons are gone at that point. You know, Gronk left, Edelman left. All I'd have is a running game, but that's all they really had in this game anyway. This was probably the worst game I've ever seen Brady play in general. So it wasn't like it was his best performance, you know, going into the game. And you can tell that he is getting old, but I wouldn't necessarily say that if Gronk retires, because we know Gronk's probably going to retire because he was even threatening it last year, that Brady would leave. I think Brady wants to get to 45 to be that, you know, I made it to 45. I have, you know, 6 to maybe 8 bowl wins, you know, and he's already, like, I think he already has the most bowl, and he's 6 of them now.
Yeah, he's got the most wins for a quarterback, and I think he's got the most appearances by any player, period. This, of course, was his 9th Super Bowl that he played in.
So then, I mean, if it were me, I'd be like, you know what? I have 6 rings. I'm basically Thanos of the league right now. And I'm going to sit down and not hurt myself, because there's always that potential when you get older that he could get hit and something very bad could happen from that.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting about this Super Bowl from Brady was that it was kind of reminiscent of Peyton Manning's Super Bowl 50 win. Because if you look at Brady's numbers, yeah, he threw for 262 yards, but he had 0 touchdowns and 1 interception. So I feel like it wasn't necessarily Brady back there making these big plays. He was mainly back there kind of being a general and a facilitator, kind of like Peyton was in his later years. So maybe Brady is starting to realize, hey, I'm not going to be able to come out here every single game and maybe on these big stages now and be able to light teams up, but I still know I can be back here and coach these guys on the field to get these big wins.
Right. Now, what I would do is in the draft, I would pick up a quarterback for Brady to train, have Brady stay one more year to get this, like, a decent quarterback behind him, because Hoyer behind him isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
If Brady leaves and Hoyer's the quarterback, you can almost guarantee that the Patriots aren't going anywhere, you know?
So what about Belichick, though? Do you think he'll leave New England before Brady does, or do you think he'll wait until Brady leaves and then make his decision, or retires, then make his decision?
See, that's an even harder one, because I almost feel like they're going to leave at the same time. I feel like if Brady leaves, then Belichick will leave, and if Belichick leaves, then Brady will leave, because that's all Brady knows is Belichick. You put another coach behind there, there's going to be a lot of controversy on play styles, on who's controlling the offense, and on all these things.
Now, there's
then
been
if Belichick leaves, you got to look at, like, the offensive coordinators. Are they going to stay, or who's going to go? It's like picking who's going to leave and stuff is the hardest thing.
Well, that's funny you should bring up the coordinator, because right now a lot of talk, or the talk that I've heard around Belichick whenever he decides to leave, is that current offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels is in line to then take over as the head coach. So if that happens, if Belichick leaves before Brady retires and McDaniels steps in, could you see them still having the same kind of success, whether it's maybe even if it's for a year or two with McDaniels that Brady has had with Belichick? I think that's kind of the big question you got to look at if you're Brady.
Yeah, I mean, if it's someone that he knows stepping in, I think it'd be fine, and he might stay that extra year. But I it's really tough to say, because Belichick isn't really thinking about leaving yet, is he? I haven't heard anything where he's even thought about really leaving yet.
Yeah, I haven't heard him make any comments. It's just been – I haven't really heard Brady make any comments either. All the comments have just been made about people in the media that just think, based on how they're talking and based on kind of the emotion around both players. I mean, you can tell that we're definitely getting towards the end of this run. The question is, do they do kind of what you said and both maybe mutually leave at the same time? Maybe Brady retires and Belichick goes on to a different team? Or will we see kind of the whole – dynamic changed if Belichick decides to leave for a different team while Brady is still playing, or Brady retires and Belichick decides to say, whatever, I'm going to stay here in New England? But
yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to move on, but if you had something else to say about Brady or Belichick, go ahead.
Oh, no, I don't have anything. All I can say is that we'll know more probably in the coming months, you know, after Brady kind of slows down and sees how his arm's doing, because like I said, this was not his best performance. I mean, we witnessed the longest punt in history, which was probably the highlight of the game for me. We witnessed the lowest scoring game in
history.
You know, in history, which
16 combined points, the lowest by 11 to the second lowest team, to the second lowest score.
Yeah, I mean, the first half was the second lowest scoring first half and then for them to end with the lowest scoring, that's pretty much in itself. And then, you know, so that being said, I personally don't believe the Rams should have even gone to this game. They did not perform any well near where they needed to. First, you have one of the number one running backs on the league, and you don't even use him. 10 carries for 35 yards. You don't even use him. He looked healthy on every run, and you don't even use him. Don't you think that kind of feels like what Belichick did with Malcolm Butler last year?
I do. I definitely think the Rams completely underutilized their running game. Even C.J. Anderson, he only had 7 carries. So, I mean, you only had 18 rushes, period, because then Robert Woods got a carry. If you're only going to run the ball 18 times, that means you are going to rely so heavily on your passing game that all Belichick's going to have to do is sit back and go, all right, we can stop this. We can stop this easily.
Exactly.
But I was going to ask you, now that you mentioned that, as I was going to the store, my sister and I went to the store and we were hearing some people talking. Mostly she was hearing the guy at the meat counter talk, but he was saying that he didn't think the Rams were ready for this stage. I think that was entirely true. I know there was a controversial call at the end of the New Orleans game, but they went into New Orleans and stood toe-to-toe with the Saints. So I feel like that they were definitely – they were ready for this game. They just went up against a team – that is so used and it just knows this stage so well and prepares for it so well that they just couldn't withstand the experience that was on the other sideline.
Yeah, I can agree with that. They didn't look – how do you explain it? They didn't look like they were unprepared for the game. They looked prepared. They looked like they were ready to go. They didn't really look nervous going into it, you know. Their defense was what – looked the best. Like, their defense was ready for that game. Goff was not ready for the game. He didn't even know what to do half the time. And then for whatever reason, you have at the, like I said, the healthy running back sitting there on the edge, not doing anything. So if you're not going to utilize your best weapon when he's healthy, and you're going to try to utilize a mediocre thrower, it's not going to work with you. You know, Jared Goff is no Patrick Mahomes. He can't sit there and complete, you know, 30 or 40 passes and still win the game. Or, you know, you can't do that. You can't even run outside of the pocket too well. So,
yeah.
Like, I was sitting on the plane and I was sitting next to a guy who is a Cowboys fan. And, you know, we were talking about the big game. And I was like, so what did you think of the game and everything? He was just like, you know, I'm not going to say it's rigged, but it's rigged. Because you're literally. The only way I could see that this game going in the Rams' direction after the first half was, you need to get in there and you need to start running. The problem was, and you know, Tony Romo said it the best, was that Belichick and the defense of the Patriots stopped that cut up the middle run that Gurley is known for.
Yeah.
They were like, all right, if Gurley's in there, you know that he's going to cut right and go left, right up the middle. All right, we're not going to run right. We're going to go straight down the left side and block the kid. They did that. The only time they didn't is when Gurley broke out for that 25-yard run, and that was the only time we were like, oh, Gurley's back, and then you didn't see him the rest of the game.
Well, I think speaks to kind of the experience of the coaching staffs. Like, if Sean McVay can see that his running back's most utilized cut isn't working, okay, that doesn't mean you keep him on the sideline, but that means that you got to get him in there and just start to experiment with new things, even if he's not as good as running on the outside or cutting out around the between the tackle or the guard. It doesn't matter. You can't just keep him on the sideline, like you were saying, when you have, you know, arguably the best player on your team at running back not in the game for more than 10 carries. I mean, you just can't have that kind of one-sided play style against New England, because it's just going to make it too easy for him. But now that Super Bowl 53 is in the books, Sean, real quick, who is your favorite to win Super Bowl 54 next year?
I'm going with the Cleveland Browns.
Nice.
I think they have, I mean, this first year for Mayfield and Chubb and everything, and going through some coaching changes, really just showed that this team could go and potentially go farther next year and get into a playoff game with a little bit more experience. I think if they grab, you know, maybe make some trades for some good wide receivers, and, you know, their defense is a solid defense. So it's like, it's almost that feeling that I had, I think it was about 4 years ago with the Jaguars. I said, I was like, you know, that last year they were all rookies on that offensive side, and then I was going into the second year thinking they'd do great. They did do a lot better, but they didn't go the distance, and then, you know, 2 years later they fall down the throat and can't do anything. But it's kind of the same feeling I had. That the difference with it being is that you have a playmaker with Mayfield there, you have Landry on the outside, you have Chubb sitting there, a few other wide receivers that are pretty good, you have a decent tight end with a name I can't even pronounce half the time, and I personally believe that the Browns have that heart and that will that they can be like, you know what, 2019, 2020 is going to be our year, and we're going to make that push for it.
I want to see either a Browns-Saints Super Bowl or a Chiefs-Saints Super Bowl. I think we got cheated out of that one this year. So those are my two hopes. Or a Chargers-Saints Super Bowl. I'll take all three.
Awesome. Before we go, before you let me go, what did you think of the halftime show?
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch a whole lot of it, but the parts I did see, I mean, it looked all right. It didn't look like anything super special. What'd you
I
think?
I thought it was the worst one in history. Worst in history. That was terrible. All right, first off, you bring in SpongeBob for 4 seconds for someone that no one in the world even knows. I didn't even know who these people were, except for the first band, Maroon 5, of course.
Yeah.
And then, like, you have Big Boy come in on a Cadillac. Like, I was like, of course he's going to come in a Cadillac. Of course. You know? Where we were at, it was great. But overall, you know, Justin Timberlake was probably one of the best, you know, and the political statements that they were trying to make during a halftime show just were not needed. You know, it's a halftime show. Have fun.
Yeah, I would say this halftime show and the Black Eyed Peas ones from like 7 years ago are probably my two least favorite halftime shows.
I agree. I think we should do that hologram one next year.
Just get a hologram Tupac, a hologram David Bowie, and then a hologram like Freddie Mercury up there and just have a halftime show for the ages.
Right, get some Michael Jackson, some Prince. Just get anyone who passed away in the past, you know, couple of years, come back, who did a Super Bowl.
Just an all-hologram halftime show would be spectacular.
That'd be great.
Sean, thank you very much, man, for taking some time out of your vacation to talk to me. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time down there in Orlando. And, you know, just be safe.
Thanks, man. You be safe with that cold weather coming in, and I'll be back in about 8 days.
All right, man, will do. You take care.
Thank you.
Well, we are 8 days into February, and we have no more NFL on TV with the Rams and Saints wrapping up the season. So that means, for me, it's fully time to get engulfed in hockey. And, man, if you didn't watch any of the games Tuesday or Thursday night, you missed out on some great games. But we have some shakeups in the standings. Let's take a look at how those are playing out right now. Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference, still maybe with the most shocking division leader this year with the New York Islanders. Right now with 68 points, 2 points ahead of the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals, and also 5 points clear of the Columbus Blue Jackets in third. New York right now has 16 points out of a possible 20 in their last 10 games on a one-game winning streak, beating the New Jersey Devils 2-1 last night in a shootout. And I don't believe a lot of people had the New York Islanders right now ahead of everybody else in the Metropolitan Division. I think they probably would have expected them to have the season that New Jersey is having, with them struggling right now, being in ninth place. But they gave the Islanders a run at home, but New York able to hold them off. Washington right now on a two-game winning streak, coming off a 4-3 victory against Colorado. Also, I believe one that went to overtime. The Washington Capitals struggling their last 10 games out of a possible 20 points. They only have 7, but they've managed to hang around that second spot in the Metropolitan Division. So we'll see what they can accomplish here in this last 2 or so months of the season. And Columbus, they were able to push Washington last year in the first round of the playoffs, and they've been showing really just some solid play both last year and this year. They've gotten 10 points out of a possible 20 in their last 10 games, and they're looking pretty good right now with 63 points as well. And then the Atlantic Division, no one's touching Tampa Bay right now. They have 82 points. They are 13 points clear of Toronto in second place. Out of their last 10 games, out of a possible 20 points, they have 12. And they are coming off a tough loss against St. Louis at home. That also was in overtime. Odd to see that game go scoreless through 60 minutes. Tampa Bay, especially at home, has no pun intended, but an electrifying presence as soon as they get out there with that crowd rocking and what they've been able to do, looking to get back to that Stanley Cup final for the first time since falling to the Chicago Blackhawks in 2015. But Toronto, Austin Matthews, a nice new contract. They are sitting in second place with 69 points, just 1 point ahead of Montreal. Really, this Tampa Bay has got the number one seed in that division entirely locked up. It's going to come down to a race for second, with Toronto with 69 points, Montreal with 68 points, and then Boston also the top wild card team from the Atlantic Division. They themselves have 66 points, so those three teams separated by just 3 points. And it's going to come down to that. Both teams having good showings this week, all with tough games. Boston coming off a tough loss to the New York Rangers, 4-3 in overtime. But don't let that game fool you. They've had a strong week. They have 12 points out of a possible 20 in their last 10 games. But they are, you know, they're Boston. They're physical. They're tough. They're in your face. And even if they're the top wild card team in the Eastern Conference, I would not be surprised to see them advance. I mean, right now that means they would be taking on the New York Islanders in the first round of the playoffs, since they are the worst of the two number one seeds in the Eastern Conference. And Boston, New York Islanders, that's going to be a good match, be a tough matchup. And you would imagine with all that physicality around those two Islanders goalkeepers who have been phenomenal this year, you would imagine that would be a pretty equal fight. But I just feel like with the physicality Boston brings, it's always tough to keep them off the board for long. And then Pittsburgh right now sitting in that second wild card spot. They have 63 points right now, tied with Columbus on points at 63, but Columbus with a little bit better tiebreaker over Pittsburgh. But that wild card race, Carolina just 3 points back of Pittsburgh, and Buffalo 4 points back of the Pens. That's kind of where we stand now. Philadelphia then about 8 points back, so we start to get a little bit out of reach there, although we do have about 2 months of the season left, so you never know what's going to happen. But with Pittsburgh sitting in that second spot, trying to compete with Columbus and stick with Washington and the New York Islanders, it'll be really interesting to see how this Eastern Conference pans itself out, especially with a lot of games coming up tomorrow. Boston taking on the Kings, but Pittsburgh at Tampa Bay, that'll be a big game for the Pens coming off kind of a surprising loss to Florida last night. Again, another overtime victory, but Florida sitting in seventh place with just 52 points. That's a tough loss for Pittsburgh right now to swallow when you're trying to, one, stick with Boston in the wild card race, and then also to try and keep Carolina and Buffalo off you as well. It's not going to be easy for Pittsburgh, but again, how do you doubt Crosby and that team and what they can do? But let's take a look now at the Western Conference, as the Central Division's kind of become a two-team race up top, with Winnipeg and Nashville duking it out. The Jets with a one-point lead currently over Nashville, 71-70 in that standing. Winnipeg losing their last couple games. They lost to Montreal 5-2 last night, then falling at home to San Jose in overtime. Also a tough loss for them. But Nashville looking good on a two-game win streak, last beating Dallas yesterday 3-2. And then Dallas right now sitting in third at 61 points. A little further back from Nashville, about 9 points back and 10 points back of Winnipeg. So you're not sure how much of a gap they're going to be able to close on those two teams. Then you look at the wild card, and right now the top two wild card teams are both out of the Central Division, meaning they are chasing Dallas, Minnesota with 57 points, and St. Louis with 55 points. So 4 and 6 points back of the Dallas Stars are Minnesota and St. Louis. And talked about St. Louis's big win over Tampa Bay yesterday in overtime, and Minnesota trying to hold their own. They are on a one-game losing streak. They fell to Edmonton 4-1, and they've been up and down this year. They'll play at New Jersey tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes. New Jersey trying to bounce back from that Islanders loss, but it's not going to be easy for Minnesota and St. Louis to stick with them, especially with Vancouver and Colorado kind of coming up from behind them. Vancouver with 55 points, Colorado with 53, and Colorado has looked really good. They've had some tough losses this past week, especially the one to Washington last night, but I like the way they're playing. I like their physicality right now, the way they push the puck. They look good. And then the Pacific Division, Calgary and San Jose up top right now. San Jose trailing the Flames by 2 points in the Pacific Division, able to help their cause last night, going up to Calgary and winning 5-2, so able to close that gap. And then Vegas sitting in third at 66 points. And those three, really the ones running the Pacific Division. Vancouver is the next closest Pacific Division team with 55 points, so they are 11 back of Vegas. So right now it looks like Calgary, San Jose, and Las Vegas are the ones running the Pacific Division. We'll see, because San Jose and Calgary have to meet one more time this year in San Jose, and that race could be this tight, if not even tighter, by that point. I believe that comes mid to late March, so about a month and a half from now, and a lot can change in that amount of time. But that's where we stand right now in the conference standings. And then a lot of fun hockey coming up this weekend. Of course, just one game tonight with the Carolina Hurricanes taking on the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden. That should be a lot of fun. But then a busy day Saturday, Bruins hosting the Kings, trying to keep pace in that wild card race. Same with the Sabres as they host the Detroit Red Wings, who are coming off a tough loss to Vegas. And you have the Wild and Devils. Avalanche at the Islanders. Just talked about how much I like the way Colorado was playing, for them to go on the road to take on the second best team in the East and the best team in the Metropolitan Division. That could be a fun one as well. Predators Blues, that's always a fun rivalry to see Nashville and St. Louis get on the ice. You got a fun all-Canadian matchup with Winnipeg and Ottawa. Even though the Senators aren't having that great of a season, the Jets looking to bounce back. This would be a good bounce back win for them, seeing as how they've had some home struggles. Sharks and Oilers, it's going to be important for San Jose, especially right now, just down 2 points to Calgary to get wins on the road in Edmonton, a tough place to do that, but you got to take that momentum. I mean, right now they've won their last four games. Three of those four have gone to overtime, so you go on the road to Edmonton, you got to have a lot of confidence in the way you're playing. And then Toronto-Montreal, that's always a fun matchup. Mentioned Pittsburgh taking on Tampa Bay. You want to check that out. And then Vegas and Columbus, two third-place divisional teams trying to make up some ground. We'll see how that battle goes in southern Nevada. But that's where we stand right now in the world of hockey. Let's talk a little bit about the world of the NBA. A lot of trades going on right now. One of the ones that caught my eye this past week was the Raptors and Grizzlies trade, where the Raptors got Marc Gasol. I feel like that is going to help really solidify this team in the Eastern Conference. All the Raptors received was Marc Gasol, but I think with that giving you a firm post, low post game, and you have Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry kind of doing their own thing and allow them to kind of work together on the outside and really mesh with Marc Gasol, that could be a dangerous team coming out of the East, especially with Tobias Harris going to Philadelphia. The 76ers looked like they are ready to take over. So the Eastern Conference going to be a lot of fun to watch. And interesting also happening yesterday, the All-Star Draft took place. The second year they decided to do this for the NBA All-Star Game, the two highest voted players by the fans get to be team captains. This year it was LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo from the Lakers and Milwaukee respectively. And so they were going back and forth. Last year it was not televised. This year they decided to televise it, and I didn't get to catch the whole thing. I caught most of it. I just caught highlights this morning, but it looked like they both had a lot of fun. I think the big highlight of it was when LeBron took Anthony Davis first overall in the draft, and I think Giannis said something to him like, "Are you sure you want to be teammates?" Of course, New Orleans and the Lakers, the Lakers were trying to get a trade worked out with New Orleans for Anthony Davis, but that did not happen by the deadline. So AD will be a Pelican for the rest of this year, and then we'll see what happens come the offseason. But I think it was a lot of fun. I always enjoy when you get to see kind of the athletes' personalities, because as much as I think we enjoy the character in sports, we freak out a lot of times when, you know, I mean, you look at Mayfield, you know, grabbing his crotch or whatever, or doing the whole choke sign to the Kansas players, or you see an NBA player just showboating down the ice, or not down the ice, but down the court, or a hockey player showboating down the ice. We sometimes get, you know, rubs us the wrong way, and it's sports. You got to get over that. That's going to happen. And so when you get these kinds of opportunities and events to broadcast what these players' personalities are like and what they you know, what their thoughts are and what they feel, it's a lot of fun. And unfortunately, I don't think the game is going to be that fun looking at the two rosters. With I'll just read you the Team LeBron roster and just tell me if you think these guys are going to do well. So obviously you have LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, Ben Simmons, LaMarcus Aldridge, Karl Anthony Towns, Bradley Beal, and Dwayne Wade. That team would win just about any competition anywhere ever, I feel like. And then Team Giannis, obviously you got Giannis on the team, but then Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, Paul George, Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Nikola Jokic, Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin, D'Angelo Russell, Nikola Vujicic, Kyle Lowry, and Dirk Nowitzki. Sorry to all the European players whose names I just butchered there. But I think the edge clearly rests with Team LeBron, and I think it's going to be fun for the first three quarters. Everyone's kind of having a laugh, and then when they all turned on the fourth quarter like they always do, I think Team LeBron's just going to run away with it. But either way, tune in, have some fun, enjoy that. When we come back, we'll preview some of the stuff happening this weekend, like UFC 234, also the new American Football League getting started, the Alliance of North American Football, I believe, getting going this Saturday and Sunday. We'll take a look at some of the games posted there. And also an event happening here in a couple weeks. We'll let you know some information on that as well here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. All righty, as we get set for the weekend, a lot of fun stuff. Coming up, we'll get into UFC 234 and the new Alliance of American Football, who was supposed to kick off tomorrow as well. But first, I want to talk about something that's happening a week from tomorrow. We'll also remind you about it next Friday as well. But be aware and please join us for the National Girls and Women in Sports Day celebration. Again, that being on February 16th. Wolfpack Athletics, Girls on the Run, Sierra's Division, the Reno Aces, Reno 1868, and Truckee Meadows Community College Athletics will join forces to celebrate National Girls and Women in Sports Day on Saturday, February 16th at the Lawler Events Center on the campus of the University of Nevada. The celebration will include a family and kids fair featuring interactive booths and activities centered around the theme of health, fitness, and sports, as well as Nevada's popular all-sports clinic, which features stations with the Wolfpack, student athletes teaching and demonstrating their sports to children. Both the fair and all sports clinic will take place on the upper concourse at Lawler Events Center prior to Nevada's women's basketball game versus Wyoming that day. The fair and all sports clinic start at 12 and run until the women's basketball game tips off against the Cowgirls at 2 p.m. So be sure to check that out next weekend. We'll also remind you about it again next weekend. But don't miss a lot of fun stuff happening this weekend. UFC 234 taking place at the Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne, Australia. Headlined by Robert Whittaker and Kevin Gastelum, going toe-to-toe for the UFC Middleweight Championship. Should be interesting. This belt's kind of been in limbo. I think the last time it was defended, or two times ago, only one half of the fight was actually eligible by weight to win the championship, and that fighter didn't even win. So this has been a belt that's been kind of just sitting there in the UFC for a little while. So hopefully Robert Whittaker or Kevin Gastelum, whoever comes out the winner and champion of the middleweight division, can at least put on some shows for that division and bring that middleweight division back up into kind of the high ranks, because it's kind of just been sitting there the last year or so with no real contenders and no real title matches and fights set up. So hopefully they can get a couple challenges for Robert Whittaker and just hopefully put on a show for the middleweight division. And then, of course, this card may have one of the best co-main events in UFC history, with the last stylebender, Israel Adesanya, taking on Anderson Silva. Adesanya is being called a young Anderson Silva in the way he controls his limbs and just looks for any kind of angle he can get. I think that's going to be a really, really, really entertaining fight, especially with just how passionate Anderson Silva is about this sport and about this industry. And you have a bantamweight fight, Ronnie Yaha versus Ricky Simon, a women's flyweight bout between Montana De La Rosa and Nadia Kassim, and then a light heavyweight fight with Jim Crute and Sam Alvey. It should be quite the card. Always fun when the UFC goes outside the U.S., especially to Melbourne, Australia. And Rod Laver Arena should be an interesting background for this, that being the tennis grounds there in Melbourne when the Australian Open is played. So it'll be interesting to kind of see the atmosphere and how the crowd noise kind of bounces around in that stadium in a fight atmosphere. And then something else kicking off this week, the Alliance of American Football is going to open up their week one with all four games in action on Saturday, San Diego at San Antonio and then Atlanta at Orlando. This will be pretty interesting to see how this goes. Then on Sunday, Memphis at Birmingham and Salt Lake at Arizona. So we'll see how this goes. There's supposed to be the NFL. That's been this whole thing. Players that can, you know, sign contracts to leave here and go to the NFL and come back. It's going to be really interesting to see the reception of this league in its first year, but should be entertaining nonetheless. But that's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you liked it. You can Again, watch all these sports this weekend and have fun doing it. Be safe out there with the weather. And again, just have fun this weekend. Peace.